right, welcome to We Talk Comics. We got Ed Brisson with us today, the author of such books as Murder Book, Black River. We got Sheltered, and of course, Comeback. So, Ed, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right.
So first off, you know, I just want to say that Sheltered is really good.
Thanks.
You know, in my opinion. In fact, when our podcast typically has four people on it, and every single one of us really liked the book. So, you know, kudos for that.
Awesome. I can deal with that.
But I want to start back at the beginning with you today. So really, where was it that that you got interested in getting into comic books?
You know what? Honestly, I think I've always been interested. I can't remember a time where I wasn't interested in making comic books. I've been reading comics since I was, too young. And I've been making comics. Like, I think my first self-published thing I probably put out in nearly 19 years ago. It was just a thing that I drew and wrote and photocopied and would sell it through local comic shops. And it was one of those things where I never really considered trying to get in with a publisher. As kind of weird as it sounds, I had almost assumed it was one of those things where, like, if a publisher was interested in your stuff, they would somehow find it and get in touch with you. So I was just kind of happy just doing my own stuff for the longest time and not really pitching to publishers. It wasn't until about 14 years in that I thought, well, maybe I should see if I can get in with a publisher and see if they might be interested in my stuff.
Yeah, because it seems fairly evident that you do have a desire to kind of do it on your own because of, I mean, I spent some time reading Murder Book, and, you know, it's very interesting that it's online, and I certainly see that we do see a lot more people putting their stuff for free online.
Yeah, I think especially like if you want to, if your goal is to get kind of like, say, like for the last 5 years, my goal has been to get into, you know, I don't want to say break into comics, it feels like a weird thing to say, but, you know, for lack of a better term, I guess that's really what it was. Is, you know, I wanted to have somebody else publish my stuff. I've been publishing my stuff for 15 years, and, you know, I wanted somebody else to have to deal with that headache, and I could just focus on concentrating. And it seemed to me like it was just the best way to go about that was basically to sort of build a portfolio, which was, for all intents and purposes, what Murder Book was. I just decided I'm going to do short stories, put them online so that everybody can read them for free, and hopefully, you know, I can get something out of that. I do have print copies that I sell at conventions as well, but my goal was really just get my work as much exposure, I guess, as possible. And like doing something like, I know a lot of guys will submit to anthologies. They're still kind of chasing that the idea of getting into print first, and somehow that will help them break into comics, which it doesn't make sense to me because, you know, for a lot of the small press anthologies, they're usually only printing a couple hundred, and then, you know, your visibility is kind of limited to whoever buys that book, and you'd be, you know, depend on somebody buying that book, liking your stuff, and either being an editor or, you know, showing it to an editor. Whereas if I just throw myself up online, which I did, then, you know, if somebody likes it, they can just link an editor and shoot them an email, or an editor might come across it somehow on their own. And this, I realize I'm giving you a very long-winded answer to your question.
Oh, that's fine. We get a lot of those. We like them.
But yeah, that was just the kind of the purpose behind it, was just to try and get as much as many eyes on my stuff as possible.
So then, basically, from my perspective, like, what's your first actual book then? Because, I mean, when I look at, you know, when I ran down your list, when I was going through and reading, I mean, you know, Black River kind of looks like amongst your first murder book, that kind of thing. So what?
Yeah, the first, like, if you want the first thing going way back to 1993, that was something called Hardcore Comics, which is an anthology I did with a couple guys. but you know, it's awful and it's terrible and nobody should seek it out. And I realize that by saying that, I'm only encouraging people to do the opposite, but
yeah, I just have this sudden urge to,
yes. But, that was my first, very first thing. And, you know, if you really hunt, you might be able to find a copy of that, but I honestly can't stress how much you would be disappointed if you look for it. And then from there I did, this series called Sob Story, which is an autobiographical comic that I used to write and draw, which is more humor based. I did that for several years. Then I did another comic called Hate Song for a while that I did under a pen name, because I used to have a really nosy boss at my old day job who kept searching me online and for some reason was obsessed with trying to bust me on doing comics at work, which I wasn't doing. But it just made more sense at that point to just use a pen name and do those. And then from there, I think I did a few pitches. And Black River was actually one of those pitches that ended up just kind of being repackaged as a one-shot. But so I think I did that in like 2008 and then started doing Murder Book. Although it didn't come out in print until 2011, I think. And then Murder Book I started doing in 2010.
So then Black River, now I just, I was on Comixology and I bought Black River on Comixology. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested in why Black River is one of the few books that say on Comixology of yours, like instead of Murder Book or, you know, I was able to find the Near Deaths, you know, Acts of Violence, not so much, but how is it that Black River wound up on Comixology?
With that, it was a thing just where I hooked up with a small publisher called 215 Inc. And that was their thing. They were publishing books, and they're the ones who handled all that. So I didn't really have anything to do with that. I've never really attempted to pitch anything to Comixology. And yeah, so that's basically, like I said, that's how that happened. They put it up on there, yeah, I just.
So who gets the money for that one then?
well, I haven't seen any money, but I don't suspect that it sold enough for me to make money. And Murder Book, there are sort of reasons that I kept it off Comixology. Like one of them is it's available for free anyway through my website, through murderbookcomic.com, and the other is that I am looking at packaging it into a larger collection that will hopefully go through a publisher. So I didn't want to do anything that would sort of take anything away from a publisher who might want to package it by having it already available. And, you know, hopefully if Publisher X packages it into a larger collection, then they can also use Comixology as another way to hopefully recoup their costs on doing that.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, when I was reading Murder Book, one of the things that I noticed, there was a couple of references to like Quebec and Montreal in there, and I'm like, what have you got against Quebec?
I don't have anything against Quebec. I think what you're talking about is the one guy really upset that he's got to go to Montreal.
Yeah, and then there was another one where you know, they were talking about Quebec or something in the
Quebec. Yeah. Yeah. Did I write it? Did they pronounce it Quebec? Oh yeah,
yeah, that's right. It's got the dash in between. Yeah.
Acts of Violence. That's right. Actually, that story in Acts of Violence, called The Orchard, it's actually, I spent my teen years in Kelowna. And Kelowna has is surrounded by orchards, and there's a sort of during the summer, Kelowna gets a lot of fruit pickers who come out from Quebec, and we get sort of like a lot of kind of like transient fruit pickers from Quebec who will come and work in the orchards, and then they'll kind of like. For a while, there was a problem where they would like just live in City Park, like just sleep in City Park. And there was this huge sort of local prejudice against them. So, you know, and Quebec is you know, something that you'd hear a lot in Kelowna. So I just kind of threw that in there in that story to give it some sort of more local flavor. And with the other story where he's mad about going to Montreal. I just thought it was funny. And like, just like, so that nobody gets any illusions. My proper name is actually Edmond Brisson, and my dad is French, as is a large portion of my family. They're actually from Quebec. So, you know, I'm just messing around with a little bit of Canadian sort of prejudices that you don't, you know, Americans probably wouldn't latch on to as much. But, you know, I think everybody who lives in Canada is fully aware of the relations between Canada, French Canada and English Canada.
Yeah, no question. It's interesting because I just read something that that said that Kelowna is got the highest crime rate of any city in Canada per capita.
Yeah, I just saw that today, and that surprises me / doesn't surprise me. It's also got the highest population of bored teenagers. if my teenage years are anything to go by. Yeah, it's kind of weird because it is sort of like, in a lot of ways, it's like a bizarre Canadian vacation destination for those who can't afford to go to California. And of course, it's got skiing during the winter. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not terribly, terribly surprised by that. But, you know, Kelowna did sort of blow up over about a 15 year period, where it was like one of the fastest growing cities in all of Canada, and maybe that's what leads to that crime statistic.
Well, I just thought Murder Book fit in perfectly with that.
Yes.
So then, let's see now. How about art? So I know that I think it says maybe it's your Twitter that you're a letter writer and former artist.
Did I write that?
Saw it somewhere, at any rate.
I used to draw my own comics. Initially, I only started writing because I didn't know any writers, and thought, you know, like I wanted to draw stories, so I wrote my own stories. And it got to the point, like I went to fine arts as well for school back in the 90s, and it just got to the point where I realized that I liked writing a whole lot more than I liked drawing. And I got more satisfaction out of it. And if I was drawing something, I'm already writing the next thing in my head. And so at a certain point, I just kind of gave up drawing, just a few years ago, and started working with artists instead. And I enjoy that process a whole lot more.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always think about it, you know, as a non-artist, I guess, that if you were working on a book, it would be so freeing to be able to do absolutely everything on a book, because then you don't have to wait for somebody else. You don't have to, you're not at their whims, kind of thing. You know, you can put whatever you want to on the page. But I guess that for you, that's a little different, eh?
Yeah, no, there's definitely some truth to that, right? Then you're like the auteur at that point. You're the one man team who can do it all. But I really just enjoy the collaborative process. I really like working with other artists. You know, for me, it's really enjoyable, and I just don't like drawing. Just don't like drawing anymore. I get really. I was a creative director and did a lot of graphic design, day job wise. But I find I get really frustrated. I have trouble sort of sitting down and actually drawing. And like I said, I really just enjoy writing and telling the stories. But I love comics and I love doing it in that medium. I can't, you know, I don't have any desire to write a novel or write short stories or anything like that.
Well, it must give you a better, kind of a better relationship in working with the artist then.
I think so. Like, I think that a few things that it gives me, and I don't want to say this is an advantage over some writers, but it may be a bit of an advantage over writers who've never drawn, is that I think I have, you know, like a near, you know, 15 years or whatever experience drawing. So I know more what goes into the process and the work involved. I think I've got, you know, a lot of that language so that when I'm trying to communicate something to an artist, it's generally a lot easier. I know what I'm looking for when I'm looking at thumbnails and stuff like that. So, you know, if somebody's perspective's even a little bit off, I can pick that up from a mile away. You know, that sort of stuff, I think really helps when putting a book together. I, you know, having that sort of language and being able to have that dialogue with an artist on their own terms rather than trying to find the words to communicate what I'm saying.
So I want to ask you about lettering. You know, I really consider lettering to be one of the most important elements of a book, quite frankly. You know, as I've gone through, because on the show we really like to do a lot of independent stuff, and so I think it's one of those things that tends to be forgotten in some cases is good lettering. And so one thing I've noticed about your work is that I think your lettering is really good. Like, you do a nice job. So how do you get into that?
The way that I initially got into lettering was that I had, after going through fine arts, I went through a pre-press and publishing program and learning the whole pre-press procedure. And I guess that's another thing that I think has helped me over the years is that I basically know production on a comic from start to end, like right through the whole printing process. I've got that stuff down. But one of the things we learn in there is with prepress is that there's a lot of crossover with lettering. So, you know, especially using a lot of Illustrator and getting those sort of tools down. And I was just lettering my own comics and happened to just apply for a lettering job at a manga company way back when, which was my first gig lettering and sort of built up from there. But yeah, I definitely think it's one of the most important things on the book. I think just like any other step in the book, it's important that it's done right and that it's not, I think that people don't give it the weight that it deserves and sometimes just kind of dash off some lettering. And so lettering is one of those things that if it's good, you don't notice it. But when it's bad, you really do. And bad lettering can take a beautiful looking book and just destroy it. but the same with any, you know, bad coloring can do the same. It can ruin beautiful artwork. So yeah, it's just one of those things that I think, you know, like I know a lot of writers try as a way to save on their production costs, and I can't blame them on this. They try and learn lettering, but for some reason just don't have that eye for it, don't understand like the whole process of like trying to draw the eye through the page and placements, and they don't understand things like leading and kerning and all that sort of stuff, which are all things that you need to understand. You need to have a pretty good understanding of typography and Illustrator and also prepress to be able to pull it all together.
Yeah, that makes good sense, you know, that about the idea that a good letter will just make it so that you don't really notice it, that you're just reading a comic book. Absolutely. So now you letter Peter Panzerfaust, correct?
I do, yes.
Yeah, so now in that case, you know, it's a great example. I mean, Curtis and Tyler, both friends of the show, but how, when you're lettering that now, A, like how much can you letter in a day? Also, how much do you input do you have over where the balloons are going? Is that mostly Tyler and Curtis?
Generally, like except for a few cases, I'm kind of left. I'm just given the script, the art, and then I just dive in and letter it. So there's no balloon placements already there. In some cases, when you're lettering, there are obvious places, you know, placements left by the artist for the balloon. But a lot of cases, sometimes it's just you know, you're trying your best to draw your eye through the page, but sometimes it's just, you know, just doing the best possible and putting it the only place you can. But yeah, usually I don't have any prior input, like, you know, before lettering. Sometimes after I hand off a book, I might get some notes and move a balloon here or there. But not terribly often, actually. But it does happen from time to time. And but yeah, they usually, like I said, I don't get a whole lot of input beforehand, for the most part.
And so then how much can you letter? Because, I mean, like, oh, yeah, obviously you're not lettering by hand. I mean, I assume that at some point that happened. But
no, mostly it's digital. Like, myself, exclusively digital for lettering. I know there are still some guys who do hand letter. I don't have the patience for it. And a lot of publishers want digital lettering because they can sort of remove the lettering, like if they sell foreign language rights, right? Because the lettering just sits as an extra layer above the artwork when you send off to print.
Right.
But how many books I can letter a day? I would like to. I could do a book a day and feel good about it. Like, that's sort of my comfort level. I have done upwards of 5 books a day and nearly died. You know, and like with the manga, I still do a lot of manga, and that's all different than I could do, you know, on a good day, upwards of 100 pages a day of manga. But I try to do about 22 pages, 22 to 30-ish pages a day is sort of my comfort level.
Wow. Yeah, that seems like quite a bit. So then what finally did break you in officially as a writer?
I think just kind of what I was pitching, and I wasn't having much luck there. But when I did Murder Book and was putting them out, I had gotten some interest. So I had spoken with some publishers and stuff about possibly doing things for them. But what really got me, like, my first, I guess, image exposure was Jay Ferber, who does Near Death, had read Murder Book. I met him at Image Expo in early 2012. And he had mentioned that he'd actually really liked Murder Book. And he'd looked at my site because he was considering about asking if I'd be interested in running any of them as backups in Near Death. But he only had 5 pages, and my shortest story was 6 pages. Or 7 pages or whatever. And so he hadn't mentioned it, you know, up until saying it at that time at the show. And I was like, well, shit, I can write 5-page stories. and he was like, yeah, sure. If you want to do 5-page stories, you know, I'll run them in the back of Near Death. And that's sort of just how that started, just through a conversation. And so we did 4 of those, I believe. And during that time, there was also a Grim Leaper, one of Curtis's books that came out, where I also ran a short 5-page murder book story with Johnny Christmas, who's drawing Sheltered now. And from that, I, like, literally probably before the first murder book came out, just after that conversation with Jay, one of my pitches, Come Back, landed at Shadowline. So Jim Valentino had picked that up. And so that we signed that, I think, in February of 2012. It didn't come out until November of 2012. So those were my 2 sort of, I guess, breaks into comics, into being published by someone other than myself, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting. Cause Comeback is definitely crazy. It's in its own way. I mean, it's got those elements of Murder Book, but with all the time travel stuff. I actually had to read it through twice just to kind of make sure that I got everything in the book.
Right. And did you, ultimately?
Perhaps I did, perhaps I didn't. I'm not 100% sure.
No problem. It was exciting. I actually really want to do, like, just a crime series, but I had been pitching crime series to publishers for a few years, and the common notes I was getting back from all of them was that crime just doesn't sell. And it's with Comeback, I just decided to sort of, you know, bring that same sort of sensibility to something else, and see if I could make that work. And I was pretty happy with how that all came down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really interesting story, and it's definitely, I think it shows a range of how far your imagination can go and that kind of thing.
Right.
Another question that I will ask about, you know, like how in that case did you go about choosing your artist?
I've been really lucky, to be honest. Like I've done the sort of standard, you know, a lot of guys will go through digital ebbing. That's how I found Shomar, who drew Black River, and Damien, who drew The Orchard, which was just the first sort of like the proto murder book story that appears in Acts of Violence. But with Comeback and Michael, Michael had actually hired me to letter a pitch that he was doing, that he was sending to publishers. And while we were working on it, I really liked his artwork. And so at the time where I was like, you know, I would normally have invoiced him, I asked him about, you know, maybe if he'd be interested in working on a pitch or on a murder book story. I happened to have a script kicking around. And he didn't know I was a writer, so he went and read Murder Book and dug it. And we sort of like basically I just didn't charge him. We were initially working out some sort of deal where I was going to do a whole bunch of lettering for him in exchange for him doing some art on Murder Book. But that kind of got scrapped, and we really hit it off. Michael and I are quite good friends now. And so we did that one Murder Book story. Then we did another pitch that didn't land anywhere called 5 Years. And then we did Comeback, was our second pitch together. And he and I were really like nose to the grindstone. We started pitching and we're like, you know, we are going to land a book at Image in the next year. And there's no taking no for an answer. Like we were focused. We were just that thing where you get in that mindset where there is no failure, if that makes sense. And it sounds arrogant, and it's not, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but it's just that thing where we were just so focused on doing it. And we managed to do that with our second pitch. I think it took us 8 months between the time that we really started working and got our first pitch landed. So that's how Michael and I met. With Johnny, I actually, before we moved this last time, I used to have, we used to live in an apartment there was no room for me to really work at home. So I rented a studio space here in Vancouver. That's like Main and Broadway, like right in the middle of town. And at some point, when Johnny first moved to town, a friend of a friend put him in touch with me because he was trying to find his own studio space. And so I ended up getting him a studio, or like introducing him to the landlord there. And there just happened to be a studio space down the hall from mine. And I don't even think I knew he did comics at that time. And it was just one of these things where he moved into the studio. He and I would just see each other in the hall all the time. We'd talk, you know, show each other the stuff we were working on, and just kind of from there, just we were both really into what the other person was doing, and sort of sat down at one point about almost like 4 years ago now, where we started talking about doing something together, and we did a couple murder book stories, and then we started on a pitch that there was some interest, but it ended up not going anywhere. And then we sort of put that on hold, and then we came back, you know, I guess about a year ago, and had a meeting where we're like, you know, we sat down over a 6-pack of beer and just, you know, sort of just, you know, batting around ideas. And that's kind of where Sheltered came out of. And so, like, I've been lucky in that I didn't really seek either of those guys out. We just kind of met, you know, like through comics somehow. But, like, it wasn't a... that I was actively seeking an artist. It was that just fortuitous. It just happened. And yeah, because, like, you know, obviously an artist search is one of the hardest things, especially at a creator-owned sort of indie level.
Yeah, for sure. We've talked to a lot of people. We just talked to Robert Venditti, and he said a similar kind of thing, you know, how artists can be really, really challenging. Especially to find the one that works exactly with the
book. Yes, absolutely.
So then, now Sheltered, like I said, I think it's really good. One of the things that I will say about it is that it doesn't seem like a typical Canadian thought up story. Like this seems like something that would be conceived of in the United States in my line of thinking. And so, where did it come from?
You know, it's funny that you said that because obviously I live in Vancouver in Canada, and when I've done signings, when I've been talking to people, I found that in Canada, when I ask people, like if they ask what the book is about, and I ask, you know, have you heard of Doomsday Preppers? In Canada, it's almost, I would say 95% of the time, they haven't. But when I was in the States, we're just at San Diego Comic-Con, we did a signing in Las Vegas, and another one in San Diego. It's the flip. Like most of the time that I ask people if they've heard of Doomsday Preppers, they have. So yeah, you're definitely not wrong in that it seems to be more of an something that's prevalent in the United States. But where the idea came from was that Johnny and I initially, one of the ideas that we were talking about was and something I wanted to do was a post-apocalyptic story. And I was aware of preppers and people preparing for, you know, sort of societal collapse or you know, a nuclear bomb or what have you. And I started researching them to sort of get an idea of how people who are prepared for the apocalypse would live after the apocalypse. But through sort of my research and watching, you know, there's a series, it's called Doomsday Preppers. There's a lot of like, a ton of blogs, a ton of podcasts, you know, there's quite a few books. The one thing I kept noticing were the children, and just got me sort of thinking about like how those kids sort of raised in that sort of, household. Cause it's usually just like, a house or one group. It's not a community like we have in Sheltered, but I thought, you know, like what would it be like one of those kids? What does that do to their psyche? And then, you know, just kind of from there, the natural extension was like, well, what if they moved off the grid? What if they did this one thing that they're talking about doing? What would that be like? What, you know, you've got a group of kids sort of raised in this environment, and how do they react to that sort of situation? And sort of the story just kind of grew out of that, that idea.
So what's your strategy then for Sheltered? I mean, I'm assuming it's not a miniseries. Like, do you have, cause I know Peter Panzerfaust has, Curtis has like a 25 or no, sorry. I forget exactly how long he has intended for it. Yeah. And then after that, it's going to be over. Now, do you have that kind of thing, or is it just go as long as you can?
No, it's not go as long as we can. How many issues right now, I can't say exactly. But I will say that there's a definite end point. And it's definitely longer than a miniseries. So, yeah, there is a definite end point. And that was actually pretty much the first thing we wrote. Like when I sat down and started planning, it was the first thing was the end. This is where it ends. This is what they're building to. So we know where that, what that is and how it's going to happen. So it's just, we're just going to enjoy the journey getting there, right now.
Well, don't tell me the end, cause I want to read it.
I'm not telling anybody anything. I don't want to spoil anything. I don't want to give anything away. So yeah. Yeah. But, I think it's an ending that hopefully people will dig. I dig the hell out of the ending, so we'll see what they think.
Well, I look forward to reading it. But so how has the response been for Sheltered? Also Comeback, like how, like when those books came out, especially the first issues, like how is the response?
Like when Comeback came out, I was like, I couldn't sleep the night before. I was just so stressed out about it. And the response was quite good. Like so far, response to Comeback was really good. It sold quite well, which I was happy for, because you know, being both Michael and I are first time guys, to most people, that it got a really good response. Shelter came out and did sales wise well beyond what we thought it was going to do, which is never a bad problem to have. And the response so far has been really good. I don't know if that's just I've got blinders on and I'm only just looking at the good response, but it's been really, really positive. We've gotten a lot of really good feedback from people. And it seems to, you know, be generating some buzz, which I'm pretty happy about, of course. So, you know, we'll see how, you know, as it goes on. I think, you know, with Sheltered, obviously, there's a lot of secrets yet to be unearthed in the series. And hopefully, you know, people stay on board for it and dig what's happening.
Yeah, because you know, I was as I follow Twitter, I certainly was seeing a lot of people mentioning it. So so that's good, excellent. Let's see now. So I think that I read somewhere that for a couple of issues, you'll be taking over on Secret Avengers.
That's true. Yeah, issues 10 and 11, which come out October and November of this year, I'll be writing a two-parter story for the Secret Avengers that takes place during the Infinity event that's happening with Marvel this summer. I guess late summer, because October, November. That's not even summer anymore. That's I guess, what is that, fall?
I think it's November when it listed is coming out. So how did you get into that?
I met an editor from Marvel when I was at C2E2. I didn't realize that she was an editor at Marvel when I met her, and I handed her a couple of murder books and come back. And she just contacted me, I guess, I want to say about a month ago now, and asked if I'd be interested in writing these. And the rest is sort of history. Like, I'm writing my second issue right now. The first one's already done.
So then, given your style, how does that translate over into Marvel's largely superhero world?
Well, the Secret Avengers, like, I think, like, if there's a book that's like a perfect fit for me at Marvel, definitely Secret Avengers, because it's more like espionage and covert sort of stuff. That said, the two issues that I'm taking over, because it's during an event, are not the Secret Avengers sort of creeping around in the shadows. They're much more in the open. But I think, you know, like, I'm doing what I'm doing anyway, like with writing, I'm really trying to work on characters and sort of make sort of an impact with the characters and something that happens throughout the thing, which I'm going to sort of dance around. I don't want to give anything away about it, but I think that's, you know, like just understanding character and being able to try and tell the story through character. I think that people will probably see a bit of what I'm doing in other books in there. It's actually, yeah. I'll just end there before I get in trouble.
Now, is this one of those cases where you're kind of looking at this as a great stepping stone? Like, would you like to really get into Marvel or DC, something like that?
I would love if this led to more work there. I want, like, I'm trying to get in as a writer to do that, you know, as my sole job, basically. So I think that it would be great. I never want to not do a creator-owned book. Just like that, I want to stay and do a lot of creator-owned books, but I, you know, definitely would love to do some work for hire as well, and do some Marvel work or do some DC work and all that sort of good stuff. But hopefully, can always keep at least one creator-owned book happening.
Have you got any other creator-owned books that you've kind of got ready to pitch or anything?
Yeah, I'm sending one off in the next couple of weeks to pitch, but I'm not going to say anything about it right yet. But hopefully that goes through, and you know, I'll have something else out early next year.
So now let's see. When you do your pitching, do you primarily pitch? I mean, one might assume that you pitch Damage first because they've published your other books. But mm-hmm. do you go after, say, a Boom or something?
I have talked to other publishers. You know, I've gotten contacted and from other publishers, and so I've talked to them. But for the next pitch, it's something that's going to Image, or I'm going to try to pitch to Image, and hopefully they'll be into it. I think like for me, like I was around when Image formed. Like if you look at my old high school yearbook when I graduated, my whole like graduation photo is just crazy amounts of love for Image, you know, and how I hope to work there one day and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that would be my primary thing with creator owned is sort of try and bring it through there. But that said, like I said, I have talked to some other publishers who are interested in doing some stuff together, and you know, I'm definitely not opposed to doing that, and pretty excited if any of that comes to fruition.
So now you've been around the industry for a little while. What do you think of these announcements of people who sign exclusive contracts with companies?
Like people signing exclusives with Marvel or DC?
Or Marvel, DC, Paul Jenkins signed with Boom, George Perez signed with Boom, that kind of thing. Especially we're seeing a lot more people that are signing exclusive deals with smaller companies because they give them more creative freedom.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I don't really have much of an opinion on it, to be honest. Like, I think as far as my understanding of exclusives go, they would still be free to do any of their own creator-owned stuff elsewhere as long as they own it. I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but I honestly don't really have much of an opinion.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was anything you kind of come across in your time.
No, like I have not been offered any sort of.
So you did just get back from San Diego, and how was that for you? How many times have you been to San Diego?
This would be my sixth time going to San Diego.
Wow.
And, I don't know. San Diego's really big. It's a lot of, I get, for the same reason that I think I'm not crazy about sort of like casinos and Las Vegas, like the strip in Las Vegas. I have the same with like sort of San Diego a little bit. Like I get worn out like after like an hour on being on the floor because there's just so much stimuli all the time. But you know, it's a crazy show and it's a lot of fun seeing, like I see a ton of people there that I only will see in San Diego every year. But it wipes me out. I got back just under 48 hours ago and I'm still sort of, you know,
feeling the effects.
Yeah. I'm still trying to recuperate.
Yeah, I totally understand that. So I see that you had a signing schedule at the Image table. Now, what else do you do in that case? Did you do any panels, or do you just kind of wander around and take in the sights?
Usually it all depends on the show. If I'm asked to be on a panel, I'll definitely do panels. But for the signings, I generally would just show up, do my signing, wander around the show a little bit. And then for this year, I had my family down there. So, you know, I've got a 7-year-old daughter. So we, you know, went to the zoo. We went to SeaWorld. We went to, you know, Legoland and all that sort of stuff, the Midway Museum. So I did a lot of touristy stuff this time when I was there. Because in the six times that I've been to San Diego, I hadn't really ever had a chance to see much of the city. So I was trying to remedy that a bit this time.
So I see that you have quite a few conventions coming up for this year. But how many do you typically do?
Last year I did 11, and this year I'm not sure. I'm not quite doing 11, but I know it's creeping up on getting close to 10, if not 10. And that's mostly just because where I feel like, you know, with the two books, I'm finally getting traction, and I don't want to sort of lose that, and I'm hoping to just sort of do the shows to have some face time with some folks and hopefully make some other things happen. And I think next year I'm gonna slow it down a little bit. My plan is to only do 4 shows next year, but every time I say that, my wife reminds me that my plan was to only do 3 this year.
any chance that you're going to be doing the Calgary show next year?
I don't know. I wanted to do it last year, but it fell on the same weekend as C2E2.
Yeah.
And I'd already been confirmed as a guest at C2E2. So, I'd never seen Chicago, so I wanted to check it out. So I'm hoping. I've done the Calgary show twice now. So this is my first, I didn't do it this year, but I did it 2011, 2012. And, I really liked that show a lot. So yeah, I definitely I'm hoping to do it again next year. I'm just trying to not plan quite yet and see what's happening in my year, and we'll go from there. But I do love doing Canadian shows when I can.
Well, I mean I certainly hope so, because then you know I'd love to come over and actually talk to you at your table, yeah, in person. For you know, it's funny because like I live in Calgary and I've been to the shows in 2011 and 2012, and it's unfortunate that I didn't know about you at that point.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll hopefully next year I'll be there, but yeah, we will see.
That's right. Then we can pop by and bother you then. But
no bother at all, man.
I'll pick up some of your books in actual print copies.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because I've always been, it's one of those cases where, like, I used to own a store at one point, and then for a little while I got out of comic books, and then when I got back in, I went to San Diego and thought it was incredible. But one of the things that really struck me was that I'm very happy as a collector to walk up to the person and hand them money directly for their books. You know, it's one thing to go to a comic book store, and it's one thing to, you know that you're handing it to Marvel or something like that. But
right. But
just the ability to be able to walk up to the creator and say, like, you know, I really like your book. Here's $10. Thank you. You know?
Yeah. No, it's I really enjoy that about shows too. Getting the FaceTime. That's one thing I actually really like about the Calgary show. I find that it's pretty busy in there, but I found that the 2 years that I was there, there were some creators who I wanted to go meet, and it was really easy to get up and meet them, and it wasn't, mile long lineups to see them. And everybody in Calgary seems really excited to buy stuff for me too, which you know, as a creator going to the show is always a bonus.
Yeah, Canadians supporting Canadians. That's the way it should be.
So, right? Right, exactly. So when you quit comics, do you remember what comic it was that turned you off? Was there a specific comic? Was there a specific moment?
You know, I don't know that there was a specific moment. I think that what happened is almost that, you know, as when we were forced to close the store, partially because of the collector boom implosion.
Right.
And so what had happened was that afterwards I did get a job working with comic books at another store. But I wasn't able to collect quite as much as I was used to reading.
Right.
And it just got to a point where you start thinking about what you're reading. And it almost evolved me as a reader. You know,
right.
I enjoy the grittier stories. I enjoy the, you know, Vertigo style stories. And I think that, frankly, I stopped being interested in superheroes.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what did it for me at a certain point was... And also, the biggest problem for me was that I didn't have any comic book store that was very close to me.
Oh, go ahead, sorry. Which comic store did you... you said you owned it?
Yeah, we owned a comic store called Scorpio for a while.
Scorpio, yeah. I used to come out to Calgary quite a bit in the 90s. I'm just trying to remember if I ever went to that... that shop, but I'm blanking on half the names.
No, I totally understand that. But after that implosion, a lot of the stores closed down in Calgary, and for us it was just a matter of, like, well, we can either never go on another vacation again, or we can, you know, close the store and perhaps find something else. But this was definitely one of those cases, and so I lost a store close to me, and then the store that I was working at closed, and so, you know, perfectly happy now in my own career, but yeah, so I found it very interesting, and as we started talking about doing the We Talk Comics podcast, then I really started getting back into reading, and then with reviewing books and the like, I'm reading a lot of interesting stuff, and so I find that some of those old things come back to me with a little more, with less superhero work and more work like Sheltered, really, you know, and that kind of the grittier things.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that interests me more as well. Like, I'm really into, like, you know, for lack of a better term, the sort of gritty stuff. So, you know, I did the same thing where I took a bit of a break from reading comics. I guess it was sort of like late 90s or early aughts where I just kind of got you know, there's part of me that says I got fed up with some stuff, but it really just came down to I just moved to Vancouver. I was broke as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to buy anything.
Yeah, that's a big one for sure.
And then once I, you know, I had a bit more disposable income, I hopped right back into it. And I found that was the stuff that I'd sort of drifted towards. It was a grittier stuff. I think one of the first books I started reading when I came back after a few years of not really reading comics was like Gotham Central and that sort of stuff. And was surprised to see that Brubaker, who I had only known from before as the guy who did Low Life, so it was kind of interesting to see him doing more mainstream work as well.
Yeah, he's a really good writer.
Oh yeah, he's great.
So then, is there who are some of the people on your wish list to work with?
Oh man, I don't know. I think. There's a laundry list, you know, like, there's guys who like, sort of like Gabriel Hardman, Declan, Shalvey, who I would, you know, love to work with, guy whose name I'm going to butcher. It's like Taunchy. I'm not even going to attempt his last name. The guy who draws, Where Is Jake Ellis? You know, Matias Scalera is an incredible artist. James Herron, I think I've said this before, but I would kill a small village of kittens for the chance to work with James Herron. You know, a few other guys. There's a lot of people who I know personally who I would love to work with. In fact, like the pitch I'm doing right now is with a friend who has done some image work. Who I've been looking forward to working with for a while, so I'm really hoping the pitch does get picked up. And other than that, I don't know. There's it changes from day to day, but those are definitely the guys mentioned. Definitely top of the list of guys I'd love to work with.
So, what are your favorite books then?
Comics?
Yeah,
comics, favorite comics. Sorry. right now, like I'm really enjoying Fatale. A criminal, when that's going on. Over the last few months, I've really been reading a lot of BPRD. I'm one of those rare dudes who I couldn't really get into Hellboy for some reason, but BPRD is really doing it for me. I just started reading Judge Dredd this past week. I've never read any Judge Dredd, so. I'm trying to remedy that. Let's see, I've been reading a whole ton of Avengers recently. what else? I don't know. I'm just kind of like a random reader. So I'll buy, you know, whatever pops up that sort of interests me. Trying to think what else I've been picking up on a regular basis lately. But those are the top ones right now. I kind of divide myself between buying new stuff and going back and reading older stuff as well.
Have you ever read Mind Management?
No, Mind Management?
Yeah, by Matt Kent. No,
I'm aware of it, but I haven't picked it up yet.
You know, it's one of my favorite series. It's something that, given the way that you write and the things that you're mentioning, I actually think that you would enjoy.
Right, he's one of those creators who I keep kind of like circling around, but I haven't quite gone in. I haven't quite picked up any of his work yet, even though everybody constantly screams at me to pick up his work. It's one of those things that I feel like sometimes the more someone tells me to do something, the less likely I am to do it. So once people stop telling me to buy his stuff for like a few months, then I'll probably do it and pretend I did it on my own volition. But yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that book.
So then, are there series that you would kind of call your mentor series, the kind of where your work has grounds, like has roots in?
I would say, I feel like, and this is not to belittle the influence that comics has had on me, but I find that like a lot of my influences on my own writing kind of come from outside of comics. It's an interesting, when I was like, if I'm just sort of going on a tangent for a bit, but when I was in fine arts back in the 90s, I was trying to become a comic artist. Now, one of the things that the my instructor told me that probably the best thing I could do if I want to become an artist is stop reading comics for a while and try and do other comics, or try and do other art. Like, you know, if I want to do illustration, do that. But just stay away from comic art for like a year or two. Just take that break and then go back to comics and bring that sort of outside experience and outside those outside influences back into your work, so that you're not like you're not studying comic artists who are, you know, have studied someone else. You're hopefully bringing something fresh. And I feel like that was sort of my approach a bit with writing. Like I'm a pretty avid reader. I read novels and nonfiction like crazy. I'm a huge Elmore Leonard fan. And I would say that writing-wise, Elmore Leonard is probably one of my biggest influences. Before that, I was a really big Stephen King fan. Since Elmore Leonard, you know, I would read Donald Westlake, primarily only when he's writing against Richard Stark. I was not crazy about any of his sort of cop humor books. Jim Thompson, Charles Williford, George Higgins, Richard Price, Russell Banks, those sort of authors. I think for me, that's where I get a lot of my sort of those would be a bigger influence on me than anything else I can think of from comics. And you know, like I said, I was hoping to bring something from outside of comics and try not be like a watered down version of something that I may have liked within comics. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. It's certainly more refreshing than the, you know, almost the standard standard answer of Watchmen or something like that.
Yeah, that's Watchmen never really did it for me. Like I get why people like it and why everything's a masterpiece, but it never really appealed to me as much as it did to everyone else. And again, that could just be me being a contrarian. But like within comics, like I think the earliest book that had the most influence on me was Kraven's Last Hunt.
Cool.
You remember that series from way back when?
Probably the best Spider-Man story ever told, I think.
I would agree. And like as a kid, you know, reading that, it really messed me up when I read it because I was like, I couldn't believe, like I'm not, you know, it's been 20 some odd years. I won't spoil the ending for anyone who's not read it.
If you haven't read it, then read it now.
Yes. But, that ending, I was like, it just blew me away that they could do that in comics. And I, you know, like growing up as a teenager, I loved horror films. I love crime films. I love all that sort of stuff. You know, I swear to God, like we had Super Channel, First Choice and Super Channel, which if anyone's living, you know, in the States listening, I would say that's like close to HBO.
HBO.
Yeah, that's like HBO. Like it showed movies. Yeah. And I swear that there's not a film that was made between like 1991 and 1999 that I haven't seen because I used to just sit on my couch and just watch like I just mainline films. Especially like horror films or any crime films. And I found that Kraven's Last Hunt was something that was just so in line with my interests. And then later on I discovered things like Sin City and Stray Bullets. Stray Bullets was a huge influence on me comics wise for just sort of what you could do. Like, you know, so it's not just like superheroes and tights. And, you know, on one side, and then sort of your Fantagraphics and your Drawn and Quarterlies on the other. And don't get me wrong, I really enjoy both of those. But there's, it seemed like, you know, like with Stray Bullets especially, there was, and Sin City, there was this, like, this middle, you know, this other, and that really appealed to me, and that's what got, those were the things that got me really excited about creating comics.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, that was some of the best years. I mean, we actually did a special on Frank Miller, and especially, I mean, Sin City has to factor in so greatly with that. I mean, he was so on in those, with a lot of those books. So then, what would you say is probably your favorite book of all time?
My favorite book of all time, I think, like, there's a one thing, it's hard to find, it's a single issue book that Fantagraphics put out by an artist named GIPI, just a GIPI, just one name, and it's called They Found the Car. It's a 30 some odd page crime story that is just so so brilliantly told, and he draws it. I love his art style, and it's just such a good story, and it holds back so much information. Like, you know, they're trying to basically, you know, that these guys committed a crime, and you know that they're trying to, you know, that the police have found this car that was involved in this crime, and they're trying to tie up loose ends, but you don't know what the crime was, or what it was that they did, or what they're on the run from, and it doesn't matter. Like, you know, the way that the story is told, that's enough information, and you just follow these characters, and it's just, I love it. It's just such a good thing. I pull it out and read it once every month or two. The single issue, that's for me, that's top dog.
All right, well, that's great. Yeah, you know, you're giving me a list here. I'm just writing all it right down. Like, I'll have to go find that one myself. But
it's a tougher one to find, unfortunately. I think it's out of print now. And last I checked, I think it was going for like a stupid amount on eBay.
Wow.
Amazon, I think, had it for like $100. But, you know, Amazon, they always have everything for
$100. Yeah.
You know, it's such a stupid thing. But yeah, if you can track it down, yeah, I'm looking at it right now on eBay, and it looks like it's like $30. Wow. Oh, there's one for $20. But it's definitely worth the read if you can get your hands on it.
Excellent. Well, you know, I've taken up so much of your time, but I will give you the chance right now to plug anything that you want to.
Oh man. Well, obviously, check out Sheltered.
If you haven't read it, buy it, read it.
Yeah, and just to go to some of your local boys out there, Kurt Pyers, he does a series called Theremin that is through Monkey Brain that I think everybody should be reading.
Absolutely. Kurt is awesome. He actually, we did last year, we kind of got as many of the Calgary folk as we could together to do a show. And so we had him and Ryan Ferrier and Ben Rankel and you know, a couple of other Scott Kowalczyk, and we did a show just about talking about comics and the industry kind of thing. It was really interesting, but yeah, I mean, Theremin is fantastic.
Yeah, and Ryan Ferrier was the other guy I was going to mention. You know, he's doing a lot of good stuff, especially he's got the website Challenger.
Yeah.
Comics Up. That I think everyone should go check out. There's a lot of free content on there. Other than that, you know, if people want to check out Murder Book, they can do that at murderbookcomic.com. And yeah, I guess that's all I need to push right now, I think.
Yeah, well, I totally recommend people read Murder Book. I really enjoyed it. Any scoops, anything that you can give us before
we go home? I think the Marvel thing was the big thing, and that came out a little bit ago now. So, you know, no other news scoops to be had at the moment. But hopefully, there's some news coming out in the next couple months.
Well, Ed, I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to tell everybody to go buy a trade paperback of Comeback. Go buy Sheltered as it comes out, and you know. You're doing great work right now, and I really appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.